Hey folks, before we get to today's episode of the Total Soccer Show featuring myself and Mr. Ryan Bailey, I wanted to let you know that this episode of the Total Soccer Show is brought to you by DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you the food you're craving right now to your door, you or anybody else. Maybe you're craving three different things, three different people craving three different things, or you individually just want three different things. All of them can be sent, all of them can arrive, and that therefore allows you to continue supporting your local restaurants in your community safely. There are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage now more than ever, so you can support your favorite local restaurants and feed yourself at the same time. That's always the goal. With over 300,000 partners in the United States, Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and Cheesecake Factory if you want to go that route. And if you do, it's worth noting, DoorDash deliveries are contactless. They keep communities safe, so you're not going to have to interact with anybody. They're just basically going to bang on your door, you're going to open it, and there's going to be food there instead of an Amazon package. It works the same way, except it's delicious food instead of cardboard boxes. Right now, our list can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code TSS. Once again, that is $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter the code TSS. Don't forget, one more time, that's code TSS for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Thank you very much to DoorDash for sponsoring this weekend review episode. Now on to me and Ryan. And welcome to the Total Soccer Show, a weekend review edition of the Total Soccer Show, the first one of the new season. My name is Taylor Rockwell. With me is a man who we have brought back out of storage for another Premier League season. It's Ryan Bailey. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, hello. Said it's good to be back. Oh, I was just singing Gary Glitter on your podcast. That's extremely inappropriate. I'm going to stop that right now. Hello.
I mean, we'll put you right back in storage if that's the kind of bar you're setting right now. People don't know that. At the end of the season, we put Ryan back in his like hermetically sealed box. He goes into storage. He waits there until we're ready for the season to start. We bring him back out, and then he's ready to go, fully recharged, I guess, with Gary Glitter songs in his head.
Yeah, let's never speak that name again on this podcast. But I do have a question for you. Having come out of my box in storage, mm-hmm. I've got a beard, right?
Yeah.
And I know you are a very prevalent beard wearer. I think it's you and Lars Siverton are sort of the podcast world's premier beard wearers.
I'll take that.
Wearing a mask with a beard,
mm-hmm.
I find it slightly bothersome. How do you find it?
Especially with how big the beard is, it feels a little bit silly. I've been asked that before. Why don't I shave the beard? Because it's quarantine. Because why not? And the answer is, I did, and I grew it right back because I've always joked. I think many people have heard me make this joke before, I'll make it again, that I don't know how many chins I had when I started growing the beard, but I know that I don't know like the number nearly as much now. Or I think I did know, like, it was probably like one or two chins before it was there. Now it's several, and that has been confirmed. So the beard is back, so I've just made my peace with the fact that, yes, it is strange to have a small piece of cloth covering a larger, fuzzier face.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to have to shave the beard because of mask wearing. Mm-hmm. It seems to bother me more than I thought I would. Anyway, I just thought I'd ask because you have a wonderful,
talking,
plush, hairy face.
Are we talking itchy? Or is it like, is it just like discomfort? Is it just a weird combination of textures that you don't like? What's the issue?
Little bit of column A, little bit of column B, little bit of column C.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can get some beard oil. You can, make it a little bit less dry, a little bit less itchy. That can help with that. Or you could just shave it off. Either way, you've got the lovely jawline, Ryan. You can pull it off.
Oh, I don't. I've got a very weak jaw, Taylor, I can assure you.
Well, you have a sterner jaw than, say, Spurs, maybe? And then maybe, say, Fulham?
We're going to talk. Being back at our storage, I'm straight in with the Taylor links. I love them. I love them. That was fantastically smooth.
I try. Except that it was sort of a workaround because the first game we're going to be talking about, we are going to be reviewing several of the games from this past weekend in the Premier League. We're starting with Liverpool Leeds, and I would say neither team really has that glass of a jaw. Both teams able to respond. Leeds continuously pulling one back. Liverpool continuously going ahead, and that's how it finishes 4-3. I have to say, 2020 has not been my favorite year, but a year in which we have Bielsa and Klopp on the sidelines. It can't be that bad, right, Ryan? I feel like this is the start of, like, see, 2021, we've got this happening, goals are happening, Jose Mourinho's already angry, 2021's going to be a good year. That's what I'm choosing to believe.
Yeah, I mean, wait till November 3rd till you fully make a decision
on that.
That's
a good
but
point.
Yes, I think you're right. I think this was a wonderful start to the Premier League season. The Battle of the Champions, Leeds' first top flight appearance for 5,964 days.
Wow.
And Leeds very much as advertised, which I believe Arlo White said on the commentary. You know, lots of high press, lots of energy, and doing some quite gung-ho things, which I think is what we wanted to see from Leeds. But I will echo a small warning, Taylor. I think everyone was very excited about Leeds coming into the Premier League, and they're very excited after having seen this first game. Scoring three goals against the champions in their backyard is an impressive feat in your first time back in this league in a very long time. But do you remember when Norwich came up? Norwich won the championship the season before. Leeds won it this previous season. Both sort of with a gung-ho style, both with a, you know, oh, you know, we'll go forward and maybe not care so much about the goals going in at the back, particularly Norwich. And I think we got a little bit excited when Norwich first started out in the Premier League. And I hope that Leeds don't dissipate and disappoint like Norwich did in the same way. Are you with me here?
I actually am not quite with you, because though I hope that they do not disappoint, I think there was a lot to like about this Leeds team in what we saw against Liverpool. Sure. And I felt like though they lost, though they came out of the gates flying, yes, there were some defensive vulnerabilities slash frailties. I will not deny that. But it did seem as though the systems that were in place, the patterns of play, the relationships between the attackers and how they all sort of moved to overwhelm or discombobulate certain Liverpool players, I thought there were reasons for optimism for Leeds fans. I thought there were like significant reasons for optimism for Liverpool fans. There has been a sort of reaction to this one of, yes, they won, but they conceded three to a team that have just come up. Like, should they be concerned? I still have them winning the league. Where are you on that one, Ryan?
I still have them not winning the league.
Oh, there we go. All right. So, two disagreements already. we should find one more just to make it a perfect treble.
Off to a flying start.
We never disagree
on anything as well. This is so strange.
I think it's you know, it's the early days. It's first match of the season. You never know. It's all the cliches. But I think
we'll do this how we do most disagreements in my life, Taylor. We'll talk for a little bit and then we'll decide I'm right.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. I'm glad we've already reached that conclusion. I disagree. There's the third one. All right. We've already done it. Now we're good. But I think for Liverpool, I didn't watch this game live. So seeing the score, I think I built this idea of like, oh, they are going to be in trouble. This is going to be the frailties and vulnerabilities, and it's going to come home to roost. They're not going to be as motivated. And then when I watched it, there's a little bit of that because it's the opening day, and I think you do probably have some players just getting back into it. Mourinho talked about how he didn't really even have a preseason with some of his players. I would assume that extends to Liverpool as well. Mm-hmm. And I still saw the things that Liverpool do very, very well being done very, very well. I saw some things that I think probably by week five are not happening anymore, and then you don't get maybe two of those three goals, and suddenly it's a bit more one-sided. I also think Leeds found some vulnerabilities that Jurgen Klopp will have to deal with. So I thought it was a very maybe good way for both teams to start, that Liverpool get the win, but still have some things to work on. Leeds do not win, but prove they can score goals, prove they can challenge even a team like Liverpool.
Yeah, and it was fascinating. It seemed like Bielsa kind of knows what he's doing, Taylor, because he did seem to unlock Liverpool in many ways. And one of the intriguing things he was doing a lot of, which you haven't seen maybe since the late 90s, was a lot of launching and hoofing long balls over the top, Route 1 style.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, there's lots of people saying, they've cracked it. They found the way to beat Liverpool. This brand new thing of pressing high and doing long balls. Why has this brand new thing never been attempted before? It has. It's what everybody in England used to do.
It has. But I thought it was a nice blend of sort of Bielsa with long ball, because it would be them evading the initial front three pressure to get usually Calvin Phillips, but occasionally other midfielders on the ball. And then it was that long ball. So it was some quick passing to alleviate the pressing. But then the long ball, I hadn't really paid attention to it until you made that note. And going back and looking at it again, you're right. That is a thing they're doing. And I think it's a thing they're doing to make Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andy Robertson stay back a little bit more. I think they're nervous about that space in behind. And I think that's what Leeds are clearly trying to exploit. So then you have Alexander-Arnold especially not being able to get as involved in the attack probably as he would like to. And that disrupts some of the rhythm of the attack. So I think that is probably what they were trying to do, and I think to some extent it really worked. I also thought they had some really good runs and some good interplay that augmented that, so it wasn't just Route 1 every single time. But I take your point. Directness with a high line can lead to problems for Liverpool in this case.
Yeah, definitely. And pick up on the Calvin Phillips. He was excellent, the Yorkshire Pirlo, doing what he's supposed to do. And there was a lot of space around the Liverpool back four, lots of space in and around them, and they were quite disjointed, Trent and Virgil van Dijk not having the best of afternoons in this one. And I think that Leeds' style of hoofing over the top, taking advantage of the fullbacks being high up the field and drawing them back, as you say, that really worked to their advantage in this game. And I was very impressed with Leeds. I thought they were much stronger in this game than I expected them to be in this game. As I say, Calvin Phillips I thought was excellent. Who else was good? Like Ayling and Click were both fantastic. Mm-hmm. Jack Harrison had a rather good game as well. We can probably talk about that in a minute. I think maybe the most impressive performance, though, was Marcelo Bielsa on the sidelines, squatting for the entire game. Maybe if you watch it live, he didn't move from that position. I can squat for maybe 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And he's in his 60s, and he's doing it for the whole game.
It's a deep squat, right? Impressive. It's a deep squat. It's a deep squat.
His groin, Taylor, must be very open. That's all I'm saying. He probably does some yoga.
I sent my wife a photo of him just before before Leeds, not Liverpool, Leeds scored their equalizer, and it's him sitting on his cooler thing that he has. And it was a pop quiz of what is he going to do to celebrate. She had some suggestions, and the answer was he did one fist bump and then calmly sipped his coffee without moving. He seems very focused on sitting, to the extent that I was like, does he have like an ink stain on the pants that he doesn't want people to see? He's embarrassed, so he's just keeping hunkered down. That is kind of his approach, but I liked the dedication to sitting, but I did also like that he didn't get overwhelmed. It wasn't a, like, we did it, we scored, because sometimes you can have that huge reaction to scoring a goal like that, but it sort of betrays that you maybe weren't sure that was going to happen, or that you feel like this is a fluke of a moment, whereas he felt his reaction seemed to indicate, like, yeah, business as usual, let's do it again. And I think that is part and parcel of what he's bringing to that team, or has brought to that team, that you could see the patterns of play that Jack Harrison, especially, who scores the great goal. But every time Liverpool concede possession or Leeds are able to win it back, he is on his horse immediately. He is looking to run in behind, which means Trent Alexander-Arnold is having to drop to make sure he's paying attention to him. When Alexander-Arnold goes forward, Harrison was constantly on a swivel, constantly checking to see where he was. I think they correctly deduced that Alexander-Arnold is a massive threat, coming out, like arriving a little bit late, making those overlapping runs. So I thought the attention to detail there allowed for a lot of the attacking fluency that then follows. And I think you mentioned Click earlier, Pablo Hernandez also, with sort of moving around, and they would swap positions, and one would advance, then the other would advance, with like a slinky sort of approach. But it seemed like Liverpool had difficulty tracking that, which probably gets us to Liverpool, because I wasn't maybe as concerned about some of the things I saw as it sounds like you were, although I guess you haven't been as high on Liverpool as I've been. So maybe it's like we're sort of in the same boat then.
I think so. And I think something else that Leeds did was exploit a little bit of weakness in Liverpool's midfield in here. I'm sorry to do it, but I have to pick out Jordan Henderson.
No, you should. That's fair.
He wasn't quite at the races in this game, was he? And no. I think he was a bit of a weakness. When you've got five players and Click and Harrison doing their temporal pincer movement, moving into the box, Tenet joke for you there, at all times, I think they needed Fabinho to come in and sort of deal with that press and help out the defence. So that was something that Klopp, what was it, about an hour before that change was made, that was something that needed to be done. So you have to give Bielsa credit for basically finding all of Liverpool's tiny weaknesses and absolutely exploiting them.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right to call it Jordan Henderson, because that first goal, and I think Leeds' third as well, comes from sort of like midfielders moving around and overloading one side and then overlapping on another. And Jordan Henderson, I think, tries to follow like the second permutation of that, and then at that point is reacting to what's happening and isn't tracking runs, and that's why there's open space. And it's not great from him, but that is also the type of thing that I think is maybe early season jitters. Early season, just sort of like they're not up to the races yet. It's an odd season. We've talked about that at length. We'll probably continue to talk about that. So I think those are just some issues that, if this is Liverpool playing Leeds in week five as opposed to week one, I think some of those issues aren't as obvious, some of them aren't as prevalent, and I think the score is maybe not quite as tight. So that's where I am with my feelings on Liverpool, never mind the fact that then we still have Mohamed Salah banging goals in. Like, the rifled shot into the top corner is always pretty, especially when it just grazes the underside of the bar. That makes it even better. But I was impressed by Mohamed Salah's attacking performance. Virgil van Dijk gets a goal, less impressive in the defensive side. But I think we still saw the attacking signs from Liverpool. My expectation is that they shore up some of the defensive issues, they get their fitness back, we see more of the same Liverpool. So that's where I am on them. Is there anything else that you think just isn't quite there, isn't enough for you? What is the main reason why you think, or if there's anything you saw from this game that has you thinking they're not going to be challenging for that title or won't be finishing the season on top?
Well, I'll answer that in two parts. As good as Mohamed Salah was, Roberto Firmino was not good in this game. I think he was mostly invisible in this game. I think he had a couple of sort of chances where he was sort of one-on-one with the keeper almost and did not do what Roberto Firmino traditionally does in that instance, which is look away from the ball and do a no-look shot, which is he did not score in this game. I think it was the 87th minute before he had a shot on target in this game, so he was pretty disappointing. But the point I've made about Liverpool not winning the league this year, I think it's about motivation. I think it's about the fact that in the past 18 months, they've been phenomenal, easy for me to say. And where do you go from there once you've won everything? And also, looking back at Klopp's patterns at Borussia Dortmund, I think it was 2011 and 12 when he sort of had that electrifying Dortmund team who won the league. And then they finished like 25 points behind Bayern the following season. Admittedly, they made it to Champions League final the following season, but they were very disappointing in the league. So I think we're going to kind of see that kind of drop off from this team. And I just there are fool's errand pre-season predictions of this kind, but I can see that Manchester City topped every kind of metric last year. You know, possession, you know, all that kind of stuff. The only metric they didn't win in was points. And I think they can keep going more consistently than this Liverpool side can. Mm-hmm. So for me, I feel like it's a question of motivation. It's a question of, this is a side, let's not forget, a newly promoted team just put three goals past them at home. That's not going to help mentally in any way. And sure, they're going to pick up and they'll be challenging for this title. But I just can't believe a team that, 190-something points over the past two seasons, I don't believe they'll keep that up for this third season.
So two things to say. One, I kind of agree. One, I kind of disagree. In talking, this is also a weird timeline thing of we're recording this Monday. Our review of the first six episodes of All or Nothing, the Tottenham Amazon documentary, will be out, I think, tomorrow. We recorded that on Friday. Then we're going to record the final three episodes, our review of those, at the later on in the week. But I'm saying that to reference that documentary of in there, there's the idea that Tottenham don't have the winning mentality. Jose Mourinho wants more fight. He wants more passion from them. I'm going to guess that is still the case after this weekend. But I was asking some people who've played professionally about that idea, because I don't necessarily buy into the idea of they just have a loser mentality. They don't have that will to win. My idea is that if you're a professional athlete who really, really, really feels that motivation, or feels the motivation it's required to get to that top, top level, the idea of then not having the fight or not having the belief, I struggle with. One point that was made to me was that Jurgen Klopp is a very good example of a manager who has found the way to walk the balance of you demand intensity, but you're affable enough that you never truly overwhelm your players. So you have this level of competition in the squad that is also sort of offset by friendly banter and his charm and personality, and that goes a long way. And I think that also explains why Liverpool haven't recruited as much, why they haven't gotten as big, at least in terms of the squad. Because I think he doesn't want some people just sitting on the sidelines being frustrated, being malcontent, complaining about why they aren't getting minutes, and then he has to kind of change up what he's doing. So I think I don't have as many concerns as some people do, not saying you do, but as some people about their lack of depth, their lack of big-name signings coming in. Mm-hmm. But I do think that I am probably excusing some things in week one that if we see in week three or week five, I am then okay, that should have been fixed by now. So maybe the difference or splitting the difference would be, I think some of your criticisms are valid, but I think I'm willing to downplay them a little bit because of it of being week one. If we continue to see those, then to me it feels like, okay, they do have some issues. Maybe there is some complacency. Maybe there are some fitness issues that you're not really going to be able to correct anytime soon. Then I will maybe have more doubts about Liverpool's viability for championship retention.
Championship retention. Mm-hmm. I like that. Maybe Leeds will be retaining the championship next season, the one they were in last year. That was a bad joke. But I don't think so. I think we can talk later on about who might be relegated, because we might be talking about one or two of those teams.
All right.
I don't think Leeds will be among them. Leeds will be a top half finish like most people. A lot of people are predicting sort of a Sheffield United path for this team. Mm-hmm. I could see them being in that sort of Newcastle zone. Can we call it that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fair zone to put them in. I like that. Well said, Ryan. So, congratulations to Liverpool and the Leeds for a very good game to start the season for both of them, albeit, you know, Leeds probably would have preferred the 1 point or even the 3 points as opposed to the zero. But I think it's a statement of intent from them. Ryan, anything else from Liverpool-Leeds before we move on?
One thing, I'm going to pose something to you. Jack Harrison, is he the next Gareth Bale? Discuss.
Do you mean because of the man bun, or because
mainly
of the
because
speed?
Of the man bun, but also because of sort of the left-sided sort of fullback turning into crazy attacking talent? Is there any logic to what I'm saying here?
There is. There really is. Actually, now that you mention it, not just because of the hair, but because of the position, because of the tenacity and speed, but also the like Gareth Bale deceptively huge and really difficult to knock around to like displace. And so that is part of the reason why that speed is so effective, because like there's the famous one of him being knocked out of bounds by a defender, but he still stays on his feet, rides the challenge, and then beats the player to the ball. That does feel like a thing Jack Harrison could do, and then the control and finishing. I see what you're saying here, Ryan Bailey. I like it. Let's put him at left wing back and see what happens.
There we go. I've just Googled Jack Harrison golf, and there's a different golfer called Jack Harrison. Didn't come up with the results I was hoping for.
But there is a connection to Jack Harrison in golf, so now it all fits out. If we see him take his hair out and it is 7 feet long, as was Gareth Bale's, then I'll be even more convinced.
Majestic. He looked like a Thundercat when he did that. Wonderful.
Somebody said he looked like Blanka from Street Fighter, and that felt very appropriate.
That's it. That's the one I was going for. Very good.
All right. Well, I think that's plenty of Liverpool Leeds. We're going to talk some other Premier League in a moment. But first, we're going to talk Manscaped. The Manscaped engineering team has just perfected the greatest nether region trimmer ever created. That's my editorializing. The Lawnmower 3.0, the premium Lawnmower 3.0. TM is waterproof, includes an LED light, and is made with advanced skin-safe technology, which reduces nicks and cuts to your delicates, which is definitely ideal. You do not want nits and cuts down there.
You do not want nicks and cuts down there. You can get this trimmer inside their Perfect Package 3.0, not 2.0 or 1.0, Perfect Package 3.0, which also includes the Manscaped TM Crop Preserver, Nether Regions Deodorant, and Crop Reviver Nether Regions Toning Spray. Hang on, toning spray? Both super practical, and they smell great, too. Toning spray.
Gotta get them toned, man. Gotta get them toned. Plus, for a limited time, when you order the Perfect Package Kit, you get two free gifts, the Shed Travel Bag and the Manscaped Anti-Chafing Boxer Briefs, Anti-Chafing Cooling Boxer Briefs that I'm going to assume would make summer a bit more palatable, a bit easier to deal with if you're in particularly hotter climates.
That sounds nice. Anti-chafing, cooling boxer briefs. I'm still stuck on toning spray, but Manscaped boxer briefs have optimal temperature control with their crop cooling technology while keeping your pride and joy supported. The waistband is super elastic, handy with Thanksgiving around the corner, and it reduces chafing and rubbing. Plus, when your significant other sees this logo, she knows she's got a real Manscaped man with a lawnmower and a Perfect Package 3.0. Baby.
I'm going to assume their optimal temperature control does not mean just putting them in the freezer, because that would be not really as effective, I don't think. So I'm glad that they figured out a better workaround. And if you want to explore that workaround, you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code TSS20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code TSS20. Thank you very much to Manscaped for sponsoring this episode of the Total Soccer Show. Ryan, shall we go Spurs Everton? Does that work for you?
Toning spray sounds good.
All right. So I'm going to start with the positives as opposed to the negatives. I think a lot of the coverage has been about Tottenham and their failure to create chances, Mourinho's frustrations in the 1-0 loss to Everton. But let's go with Everton getting that goal, getting that win, getting a midfield, and that midfield looked good.
It did indeed. Old James Rodriguez and Mr. Decore and Alan as well, all being pretty darn good in this game, weren't they? They actually have a midfield. It's lovely to see. I was particularly impressed with... Are we saying Alan or Alan? How are we going?
I think Alan.
That?
Yeah.
Alan. Mm-hmm. Like a Lotus Alan.
I can't go with like Alan as though he's, I don't know, like an accountant in the Midlands.
A plumber from the Midlands, yeah. Or Alan.
yeah, exactly. See, you get what I'm getting at.
You got any toning spray, Alan? Anyway, I think he's a good sort of a guy replacement, a solid upgrade even. Let's see how that one pans out. But yeah, very, very impressed with this Everton side. You know how Larry David in Curb Your Enthusiasm strokes the German Shepherd and says, it's nice to be affectionate to something German. I was just sitting there thinking, it is nice to be happy about watching Everton.
Right. I had
the same feelings running through my veins watching this. And maybe it's 2020 that, you know, everything's upside down. But watching Everton and thinking, wow, this is good. Very pleasing game to watch.
I especially enjoy the reaction of Everton fans, both to like some of my predictions about James Rodriguez, a joke I made on Twitter, but also just the vibe seems to be like, okay, let's not, like, we're not entirely sure this is real. Like, this might still be a dream that we don't want to wake up from with Carlo Ancelotti in charge, James Rodriguez looking amazing again, Alan bossing midfield, Ducore doing the exact same thing. There's a vibe of like, let's not talk about this because we want to make sure it's real first. If this is not real, we're all going to be very, very collectively upset. But trust me, Everton fans, it is real. At least I'm pretty sure it's real. Like, I'm like 95% sure it's real.
And this is in the same way that maybe Arsenal were flattered by playing Fulham this weekend. We'll get to that later. But I felt a little bit like Everton might have been flattered by playing this Tottenham side in that they had quite a lot of space in the final third. Their front three had a lot of room to manoeuvre, and it was a bit basketball-esque at times, I thought, you know, with the way it was going back and forth. And I thought that, you know, there might be some teams who wouldn't afford that front three quite as much space and freedom as they had. But full credit to them because they took advantage of it, and this was a very, very good Everton team. Yeah, the only thing I thought was very odd was Pickford's distribution. I think some people have made something of this in that every other goalkeeper seems to insist on playing short passes out of the back because they've watched Man City do it. Pickford just hoofing down the field, maybe 20% of the time hitting an Everton player. Bit curious that, but otherwise, very good.
I am inclined to believe that there's some sort of method to that madness of like, we just want to like give the ball back to Tottenham, watch them fail to create, and then capitalize upon that or something. Because this is definitely a game, in contrast to Liverpool Leeds, where I felt like it's week one, we'll see what happens, we'll see like there's some little issues that maybe just need to be tweaked or fine-tuned. Here, Everton played a very good game. I think they did exactly what they wanted to do, but that is sort of the issue, is that they were able to do effectively what they wanted to without much difficulty. Let's say they're trying to play through the middle. They want it to go to Alan. Alan wants to play to Ducore. Ducore is going to play forward and then see what his options are. Ideally, if you're Tottenham, you've got disruptions to that. You're not really letting it get to Alan really easily. And then if it does, you've got people around him instantly pressing and options are cut off. And it felt like Everton played that pass in and he turned and played it forward and Ducore carried it forward as they wanted to, as you would in like training almost, because there just wasn't that intensity to Spurs. And so I take your point that like, to some extent, I think Everton were a little bit flattered by Spurs' kind of lack of defensive fight and their lack of pressing effort. That said, Everton were very, very good. And you look at like James comes in, makes his debut, creates five clear chances, which I believe I'm correct in saying is the most by an Everton player in the past 2 years. So that's definitely a positive. Ducore doing exactly what we expected, given exactly what he did at Watford. And then Alan bossing midfield, like, making smart passes, driving the ball forward, doing the defensive work, hustling everywhere, creating 2v1s on defense. I think that's exactly what Everton fans would have wanted. So it's a very strong start for Everton. It's a good goal by Calvert-Lewin. Don't get me wrong there. He does a great job with that goal.
Yeah.
But for Spurs, I'm a little bit concerned because I think maybe I bought into the all or nothing hype just a little bit. And I thought like, okay, Mourinho's got a bunch of these guys on board. It's going to be a little bit better. He's going to have more time with them. Come the next season, they're all going to be together and playing this kind of, not harmonious style, because I would never go that far, but I would say that they're going to be all bought into the system. And yet, it's a lot of the same frustrations from the couple like final games at the end of last season. A great point made by Charlie Eccleshare for The Athletic. Son has 2 goals in his last 10 matches. Lucas, 0 goals in 16. Bergwijn, 0 in his last 9. Ali, 1 from the penalty spot in the last 14. That's 3 goals, 2 from open play in that quartet's combined last 49 matches. So you're not seeing that creativity. And as I alluded to earlier, in the past, it was Harry Kane would still make up that difference. Harry Kane will find a way to score. The other team then has to go chasing. They have to get a little bit more stretched. And then you get a second one. Then you get a third one. Things are fine. But if Harry Kane isn't getting the touches, isn't getting those chances, or isn't able to take them as effectively or efficiently, now you're in a bit of a worrying spot. And there's that old concern about Jose Mourinho not really building attacking sides, kind of letting his attackers do what they want, being more focused on the defense. But if you're not creating really anything in the attack, then you can't really rely on those patterns and that familiarity of the players. Yeah. So I have some big concerns about Tottenham now. Where are you on them, Ryan?
I have some big slash hilarious concerns for Tottenham also. that's a stunning stat about the lack of goals between that quartet there, by the way. There was a moment about the half-hour mark where I think it was Son broke away and he played the ball to Dele Alli, who was on the edge of the box, had two men on him, and he had Kane making a run, a crossfield run into the box, and was completely clear on goal. But I think Dele had a little shot instead.
Yeah, he did.
And the look on Kane's face of disappointment was palpable. And I've never seen Harry Kane run that fast.
No.
The way when he darted across the field, I saw Dele with the ball and I saw someone dart across the field. I was like, who the heck is that? It's not Harry Kane, because it was lightning quick and he didn't get the ball. And I think that sort of summed up their afternoon a little bit there. But the one moment they had to show some creativity, they did not do it.
I agree. And if I could double down on that for a moment, because I noticed that moment as well for both Harry Kane being frustrated. You can see him gesturing to Son of like, you should have played me in. And I don't think Son necessarily gets it wrong, because I think in that moment it's a trickier pass to make, whereas laying on off to Dele Alli to hit first time, which he does not do, he takes a touch and then hits it. I think that does make a little bit of sense. What I thought was telling was Dele Alli, after the shot, it's deflected over. I believe it goes deflected over for a corner, and he's sitting there and you can see him look at them like, I did good, right, guys? Like, oh, I almost scored. Like, you can see that moment of like, ah, it was close though, right? And then he realizes the two of them are arguing about the pass. And it was just a moment of like, he's expecting praise. He's expecting it to be a little bit of like, hey, we built something. Let's keep it going. Maybe not even from a like, hey, I did something, right? Praise me. But more of a like, good stuff, guys. And instead, his two teammates in the attack were sort of arguing with each other about where the ball should have gone or if it should have been played. That felt telling to me that they're not even on the same page and how they react to a chance.
They weren't actually arguing about when the ball should have been played, by the way. They were arguing about which chocolate bar was best. Imaginary chocolate bar, that's what they were doing.
Nonsense chocolate bars. That's what I have to say to that.
Made up non-copyright infringing chocolate bars.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, this was a very sort of a disappointing, ponderous Tottenham side. Very little urgency throughout this team. And I think Jose made a point about this team isn't pressing. And it's almost as if this Tottenham team are doing exactly what they've been doing for well over a year.
Yeah.
And there were some stats on Match of the Day about their interceptions and their possession, one, their attempted tackles. They had 9 attempted tackles in this game, which ranks them like 11th in the Premier League, the Match of the Day 2 stat says.
And I think it was with only 12 teams having played. So they're 11th out of 12, yeah.
11th out of 12, correct. And they were 12th for interceptions and 12th for possession 1. So very poor from them. And I believe it was Højbjerg who made 6 of those 9 attempted tackles. Højbjerg being sort of the dirty scoundrel muscle man in the middle. Who was it near the end? Did he put in a pretty appalling tackle on, I think, on Richarlison as well?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
He got away with. And Højbjerg, a lot of chat about him, a sort of Southampton fans going, see, we told you he was extremely average. But I think it was sort of indicative of this whole side. Like that Winks and Højbjerg pivot in the middle. Oh, it was so uninspiring to watch. So Harry Winks, I don't think he played the ball forward all day. It was sideways or backwards. It was a bit negative. And Højbjerg, sort of no creativity either. All a bit dull there. And let's look at it this way. Everton had a few good players, new signings, who performed really well. I'm not so convinced the new signings in the Tottenham side did quite the same thing, with Højbjerg being a bit disappointing. And Matt Doherty, he got into the box a couple of times. I think he had almost had a very good shot where sort of Harry Kane looped a ball over to him, but not necessarily suited to a back four, and not necessarily suited to a defence where he doesn't have Willy Bolly covering his ass most of the time. Because I think there was a couple of moments where was it? When Richarlison missed that really good effort early on, I think Doherty had left Alderweireld high and dry, and Alderweireld had to try and keep up with Richarlison, which he couldn't do.
The bad pass from Ben Davies? Because I think the horrible pass from Ben Davies sort of alleviates some of the blame on either Doherty or Alderweireld.
That was a loose pass, but the point being that Alderweireld had to cover, you know, was expected to do the Will Bowley job.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
Which he could, I mean, he's getting on in years and not got as much pace and was clearly beaten for pace there. I wasn't overly convinced by Doherty or Højbjerg or everyone else on the Tottenham team.
Yeah. I am happy that you've said his name first, because Daryl has always called him Matt Doherty, so I've always gone with Matt Doherty. And this reminds me of way back when I hadn't seen a certain Wigan manager's name written down, and I had only heard the British pronunciation. So I said once, like, Roberto Martinez, and everybody looked at me like, You know his name is Martinez, right? I was not paying attention to that. And for a moment, when the commentators in this game kept calling him Matt Doherty, and I had a moment of like, have I been saying this wrong the whole time? Because I've trusted Daryl's pronunciation. He's got that weird Midlands one. But no, it's Doherty, it seems. At least Ryan has said that too. So I feel a little bit better. Get it together, NBC Sports commentators.
Were the commentators pandering to the U.S. pronunciation?
Because I know. That might be.
I know Doherty's out here who would pronounce it Doherty, but he's Irish. It's very much Doherty. Okay, how you'd say that.
All right, that's good to know. But yeah. I'm with you as well that I had a lot more enthusiasm for that signing. I thought it would work better. It seemed sort of a very logical fit, Matt Doherty as the right back.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like, and even that blown sequence in which Richarlison should have scored, and you could have said that about three different times in this game, it could have been a lot worse for Spurs. That is Doherty moving out way wide and a little bit high up the field, and it leaves, you're right, like a good 30-yard gap between Alderweireld and Doherty. So in that regard, that does feel a little bit like, yeah, he's used to being a wingback who can sort of get further up because he has that cover. So a good point there, and then I'm with you on Højbjerg as well. Daryl was very optimistic about him and I think was pretty positive about that signing in his Tottenham preview. Not to say that I disagree, just to say that maybe this is another game in which he is still figuring it out. He's still getting the team around him to sort of figure some things out. But I did see a lack of like attacking effort and defensive effort on occasion as the game went on. And I don't know if that's because it was a fitness thing, if that was a frustration confusion thing, or if that was a just team-wide vulnerability. But either way, the new signings for Everton definitely shining a bit more than the ones for Spurs.
Definitely so. And something else that's sort of indicative of Spurs being in trouble was they were just banging in loads of crosses quite a lot and using the wide, trying to get the play wide and banging in loads of crosses, not noticing that Yerry Mina and Michael Keane are like 8 feet tall, both of them. And it was pretty futile to do this. And it reminded me of whenever Manchester City have a bad game or they get in trouble or they run out of ideas, that's what they do. They get to the touchline and try and bang in loads of crosses rather than try and work the ball into the box on the floor, as is their want. So there was kind of some similarities with when City are in trouble, I found, with Tottenham in this game. But it was just also indicative they couldn't find a way through the midfield because the midfield, Everton's midfield was very impressive in this game as well.
So I will say for Tottenham fans, I do want to give them a potential reason for optimism. I shall try my best. But
stadium's very nice, yeah.
There is that. There's definitely that. It's very, very nice. It's got lovely acoustics. I'm assuming even more lovely when it's a full crowd, but I've forgotten what that sounds like because that doesn't exist. But for Spurs fans who maybe have bought into Mourinho or like Jose Mourinho there, those who do not, I think I will never convince because that's not what I'm trying to do. But for people who still think that Jose Mourinho was a smart appointment, who think that he can pull it around, a lot of the post-match comments, I think, have been taken very much out of context. Like, I saw one about, I can't coach the referees, so I have to focus on my players. And out of context, that sounds like, oh, he's complaining because the free kick is taken maybe 6 yards further up the field than it should have been, and he's saying that's the referee's fault, and that changes the whole game. You read that quote within context, and it really is a throwaway line to get at the heart of the matter, which is his players need to be better, they need to be better coached and better prepared. So his point is just like, yeah, I can't coach the referee, I gotta coach my players, and my players need to be better, and that's what we're gonna focus on. Similarly, the lack of fight, lack of enthusiasm, like, that's not it. It's like he throws them out of the bus or he attacks his players is how I've seen that branded. And really, it's just him saying what we've seen him say in that documentary very publicly, that there needs to be more fight, there needs to be more belief. And when Everton go 1-0 ahead, a more familiarity from that documentary is that it felt like Spurs just panicked. It felt like there was this, oh no, we're losing. What are we going to do? This is so bad. This is so bad. And they start making foolish passes and silly mistakes and just little things that you wouldn't expect of them. But I don't think that this is, oh, here we go, Mourinho's going to blow up and the players don't like him. I think that is slightly a constructed narrative. I think there are reasons for concern for sure. I think that he needs to do a lot more to tighten up the squad and get them playing in some semblance of an attacking order, but I don't think things are quite as bleak as maybe they're being made to seem.
Maybe so. But I'm not buying the free kick was taken in the wrong position argument. Maybe I'd buy that if it was on the edge of the box and it had quite a percentage difference in the distance. This thing was way out on the left flank when this ball came in, and it does detract from the fact that Lucas Digne's free kick was absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
And that Calvert-Lewin jumped a full foot and a half above Eric Dier to get that header into the back of the net, which didn't reflect well on Eric Dier dropping back into centre-back position either. So that just seemed like picking on something very minor in what was... They just got completely outplayed in that set piece.
Yeah. Two things there. Because I went back and watched that a number of different times to see if there are any alternate angles or to see if anything really like untoward happens. Before I talk about that, I want to say you're absolutely right with Calvert-Lewin hanging in the air. It's a massive header. It's an incredible ball from Digne. It is perfect. It is the type of goal that is difficult to break down just because it is perfect execution in the delivery and then in the finish. And that's really what you can say about it. It's like, yes, it's a massive header, but there's not a lot, in my mind at least. There's not like a bunch of screens and it's a design set piece that leads to this person wide open at the back post. It's just a great run, a great ball in, and a great finish. Mm-hmm. The other thing I paid attention to was wondering, because Spurs did that thing that I will never understand of when like the line sets up 4 yards ahead of the 18. Like that, I don't, just stand on, you have a literal line there, because by the time that ball is played in, the line that they're keeping 4 yards at the 18 is no longer a line because defenders have dropped in and now you're all over the place. And so I did wonder for a moment if maybe they had set up in relation to the original spot of the free kick and then it had been moved forward, but that is not the case. They set up in relation to where Lucas Moura is standing. He backs off a little bit, but it's not as though they were thrown off by the ball being moved or anything like that. I think it's just an easy thing to point to in that moment because you can't really say much else about it if you're Jose Mourinho, aside from that free kick shouldn't have been conceded and maybe we should have done a better job where we set that line. So I don't really buy into that narrative either. I don't really think it had that much of an impact, but I did want to mention it. And I also wanted to mention that once again, Everton looking very, very good.
Yeah, good indeed. Maybe this whole thing was because Harry Kane's pre-match team talk wasn't good enough. Maybe he only used 6 words instead of his standard 7.
Four F-bombs in 6 words instead of 7 in his usual 10? Yeah.
Precisely.
Okay. All right. So we shall keep an eye on what happens with Spurs and how Jose Mourinho fixes things. Or if we see the head shave happen by week 2, then we know maybe things aren't going to be fixed. But for Everton fans, I think reason for optimism. Carlo Ancelotti has that team playing well, and I think they will continue to do so. We've got one more Premier League game that we want to talk about in detail. But first, we want to talk about today's sponsor, Earnest. Earnest with an exclamation point. Now is the time to get your student loan payments under control. You could be saving by refinancing your student loans with Earnest. If you've been paying the kind of same rate consistently for a very long time, if you've been making that same monthly payment on your student loans, odds are you could reduce that payment and save by refinancing with Earnest.
Ernest is a character played by Jim Varney.
This is true.
Oh, sorry, I've got the wrong copy here. Sorry. I love my high student loan payments, said no one ever.
Yep.
Check if refinancing Ernest could help you lower your monthly payments. Checking, Taylor. It takes just 2 minutes. No toning spray required. And if your student loan payment is too high, then refinancing with Ernest could help you lower your monthly payment. Ernest Goes to Jail or Ernest Scared Stupid? Which one was the best one, Taylor?
I cannot remember an Ernest movie, but I'm going to say Ernest. What? I'm going to say Ernest Goes to Jail. I don't know what Scared Stupid was, but Ernest in a jail situation. Is that with Evil Ernest as well?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. Yeah. And Scared Stupid was like the Halloween one, but I liked both. I had both on VHS, I believe.
I really wish that you had like written fake copy for an Ernest box set or something, and you just kept reading from that as I did the actual Ernest copy.
If I could have riffed on that for longer, I would have. I'm sorry.
I do think understanding the Ernest Jim Varney plot line only takes about 2 minutes, which coincidentally is also how long it takes to check your new rate. It's very fast and easy.
Yeah.
To start, complete a few questions online. Again, only about 2 minutes, and you'll get a personalized rate estimate without affecting your credit score. So, Ryan, if people would like to take action, if people would like to check out what Ernest has to offer, I believe they could, and I believe they could do so with a discounted rate at that.
Oh, you're quite right. You can get $100 of cash bonus when you refinance a student loan with Earnest. And you go to earnest.com/TSS. Earnest.com/goes to jail. I mean, TSS. Once again, that's $100 of cash bonus when you refinance your student loan at earnest.com/TSS.
Not available in all states. I shall do the fine print reading. Are you ready?
Go on.
Visit earnest.com/TSS for more details. Terms and conditions apply. Earnest student loan refinance loans are made by Earnest Operations LLC, NMLS, number 1204917, California Financing Law License, number 6054788, 303 2nd Street, Suite 401 North, San Francisco, California, 94107. Visit earnest.com licenses for a full list of license states. Whew. That was long, but I can breathe.
That was great. Can you do it again?
No, but I will copy and paste it in and pretend like I did. Does that count?
Ernest Goes to Jail, released in April 1990. It was only 81-minute running time. That's short.
That wow. is barely a movie. Not barely a service is what Ernest offers you. So thank you to Ernest for sponsoring today's episode. Ryan, let's talk Arsenal Fulham. I'm going to assume that's one of the teams that you were alluding to earlier, Fulham, when you were talking about teams that might be having a rougher season.
Yeah, and I think I tweeted a little hastily while watching this game that I've got no indication here that Fulham are going to stay up, sort of not conceding the fact that this was not a full-strength Fulham team. None of their new signings, no Mitrovic, and in need of quite a few positions to be filled. Maybe that Tim Ream position to be filled as well. Maybe a winger, maybe a defensive midfielder would be handy. It seemed like this was a very flattering opponent for Arsenal to have on their opening day, buoying them with confidence. Fulham, not really very good at defending, not very good at attacking, losing the ball an awful lot. It made Arsenal look good. It made their new signing shine. And it made their set-piece coach probably get a raise because they were much, much better in that department too.
I would say, I think for me, this is a case of things being two things, of Arsenal being very, very good and Fulham being the opposite of that. Because by my count, this was nine of their basically like normal 11 starters from last season. Whether or not that remains the case, I think is a point you're making with like Tom Kearney and Harrison Reed, the performance they put in. Do you maybe give Jean-Michel Seri another chance? The big signing who has not really panned out yet, does he come back in? Mitrovic, maybe does he make that difference? So there are, you're right, some players who maybe could come in, could have an impact. But I was definitely concerned that this is a team that played a lot of games last season, have that familiarity, and the narrative on them coming in was Scott Parker has found a way to sort of keep some of the attacking grit, but at the same time making them much more defensively solid. They play better, they keep possession, they're able to move it. The question then was, can they keep that going in the Premier League? And I think we sort of have an answer, at least an early answer, of not in the way they intended, because Arsenal not really looking too bothered by a lot that Fulham threw at them. So I think Fulham will definitely need to figure some things out very, very quickly. For Arsenal, I did feel like they had resolve some things, though there is the almost calamitous moment inside of the first, like, what, 4 minutes or 4 seconds or something like that, where there's the miscommunication between Gabriel and Leno, almost leads to an own goal, or at least a chance there for Fulham. It does not, and in the end, Arsenal get the 3-0 win. What impressed you from Arsenal and what they did in the game?
I think, well, let's talk about the one thing that I think has been the game changer for them, certainly in this game.
Sure.
Who knew that fixing Arsenal was the way to do that was to get a player who wasn't good enough to get in Chelsea's team? William was very good in this game, wasn't he? With his, was it three assists in the end? Yeah, very good. I thought Arsenal just they tend to be very good. Arteta Arsenal tends to be very good against bigger teams, and it seems like they've now found a way to beat the less expansive teams in the bottom half. It seems like, I don't know, are you getting what I'm saying here?
It's yeah. Like,
not only are they much sort of got a bit more solidarity and open play, but as I mentioned there, the set pieces looked a lot better. Just looked like all around a more solidified unit, I thought.
Which is interesting, because we do have the pre-match situation fight scrap with Dennis Ceballos and Eddie Nketiah. They're in a, if people haven't seen it, they're in a rondo. Ceballos is in the middle trying to win the ball back. The ball goes to Nketiah, and Ceballos, I think, goes in a little bit too hard for Nketiah's liking. There's a moment of a scrap there. Then play resumes, and it happens again.
I think does it again straight away.
Yeah, and I think Nketiah sort of kicks the ball at Ceballos in a very, like, how dare you come at me again moment. And I have sympathy for both, because I think Ceballos is trying to win the ball back. Nobody wants to be in the middle. I think for Nketiah, neither of them is starting. This is sort of the substitutes, keeping the ball moving, keeping their legs fresh. And so you don't expect that level of intensity, except that I do think that's what Mikel Arteta expects. And this feels a little bit like what Jose Mourinho is talking about, that if you want to win, everybody on your team has got to be hungry and got to be trying to constantly prove that they should be starting, that they deserve to be starting. And a way you do that is with that intensity and with that effort. So I feel like we saw some of that fight a little bit from the two. And then I think a key point there being that it's pretty much resolved very quickly, if not before the game, then afterwards, but no lingering issue there. And I know, I think, was it Rio Ferdinand who was talking about it as not being a big deal either?
Yeah, he said, yeah, that happens, you know, one or two times a week in training. And I'm thinking, does it really? Does that really happen twice a week in training? I know you worked with Rory Keane for a long time, but that seems excessive for your colleagues to not be getting along quite that much. And
yeah,
he sort of dismissed it as like, that happens all the time. We just happen to see it on camera. Because they were doing it on the field before a game when there were cameras. Yeah, that's why we saw it.
Yeah, I do wonder if that happens if there are fans there, because that is a thing that like everybody would pay attention to and see, and it would be probably a larger deal. So it still gets caught. It's still discussed. But it is a strange thing about soccer. It always confounds my wife and my adult games when two guys will get into it and be like in each other's faces and battling the whole game, and there's yellow cards. And at the end, it's like high fives and laughing as they walk off the field. And it's that, like, how can you switch from one to the other? And I think that's kind of, it's almost like an accepted thing of like, yeah, emotions run high. There's intensity getting ready for a game. Adrenaline is there. But you can sort of let it go because neither one truly meant anything. I think if it kept happening and it felt like more of a persistent feud than a one-off incident, it's probably a bigger issue. But to the heart of the matter, it's that they come together, they deal with it. As Rio Ferdinand says, maybe it's not that big of a matter. And I think with that in mind, you have the team playing kind of a unified soccer, that it felt like there were smiles when there were missed chances as opposed to frustration. There wasn't a lot of gesticulating for why didn't you play that ball, that I think we did even see at this point last season in the first couple games. There was visible frustration, a visible lack of identity with Arsenal, and I think a lot of that has been resolved, to my eye at least, in this first game. Again, I don't want to jump to massive conclusions here, but I found this to be a very convincing win, even if Fulham were themselves not particularly convincing.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think that all the positive body language that was absent from Tottenham was very much here with this Arsenal team, as you say there. And the new signings were looking very good. Gabriel looking very good. Even Mohamed Elneny looking good.
Right? New signing Mohamed Elneny.
Well, new signing in that they were good while he was playing with in the team, which doesn't always happen. But like, this Arsenal team looked very good in transition. Even you know, Hector Bellerin was very good, even when he did that hilarious rugby tackle for which he got the yellow card late on. It just looked like a very positive, enjoyable Arsenal side to watch. I thought it was very, very impressive stuff, and indicative of the fact that I think Arsenal will be a bit more of a challenger this season. Yeah.
I also thought there were interesting moments. Like, again, a midfield in a Arsenal go with a back three of sorts, and then you've got the midfield two of Elneny and Xhaka, which, if you're an Arsenal fan, you probably saw that and thought, like, oh, no, we're flying through the air. This is not going to be good. And I think if there had been fans, again, I think there are moments. Xhaka has two sort of whiffs at the top of the box where he should have done better but doesn't make good contact. And I thought it was telling that there wasn't a big reaction to that, and there hasn't been. There wasn't a, like, oh, Xhaka letting us down again. Is he good enough? Should he be starting? Should he be a leader for this team? And maybe there is an element of, you don't have the fans there. Some of the narratives maybe go out the window. It's a bit more relaxed, because even when he misses that, it's a little bit teasing. It's a little bit like, oh, he should have done better. And I go back to the Gabriel thing, where there are other moments in which a center back doesn't hear something or thinks he hears something, and there's a miscommunication. The ball almost goes in, and a goalkeeper screams at the defender. The defender screams back, and suddenly there's tension right away. And I think Leno and Gabriel were both sort of just smiling at each other, like, oh, that was almost bad, right? Like, oh, yeah, let's not do that again. Like, you need that relaxed vibe. You need that approach so that then when you do have a moment like with Ceballos and Nketiah, it doesn't boil over, because there's an air of like, yeah, but we're all friends here. We're all family. It's going to be fine.
Maybe they needed that fight to succeed. And I think the best moment of the game was the third goal. That really, really good team goal, sort of Community Shield-esque team goal, with those really tight passes coming out of the box. And then I think it was Elneny who sort of flicked the ball over his man to beat him and gets the ball to Willian, who does that perfect crossfield ball to Aubameyang with a really nice finish. And it just felt like as soon as Elneny had beaten his man and got the ball to Willian, I just felt there's going to be a goal here, because you could just see the momentum going across the field. You thought there's no way this move doesn't end with a goal or a really good shot. And it was one of those moments where I almost felt like I'd seen the future before it happened. And that happens very rarely to me. Otherwise, I'd be much richer from my gambling. But
I know what you mean, though. I really do.
It felt like the commentator sensed it as well, because of the raise in his tone as well. But that was just a good moment, a really good team goal, and a good indication of, I think, Some good times on the horizon for the Arsenal Football Club.
I hadn't really thought about it like that, but if you look at the three goals, Lacazette's, the opener, is a bit of a scrap. It's kind of like a fortuitous moment. He gets on the end of it. It's some not great defending from Fulham, but it's still, it's the scrap and the fight and the kind of never give up nature you need to get a goal. Then you have Gabriel with the second off of a great set piece. It's a big header, but he makes good contact.
I think it makes the keeper too.
What's that?
The header nut makes the keeper.
It does, exactly. I think there was some speculation that maybe he heads it into his own body. I'm not sure about that one, but I'll say he gets there, he puts it on frame, he gets it down. That's always going to be a problem. So it's good fight, it's good set piece attacking. And then for that third goal, it is good team play, as you said. And then there's that feeling with Aubameyang in that position of like, oh, this is going back corner very hard. And that's exactly how that went down. An in-form Aubameyang should have Premier League defenders slightly nervous to very nervous, somewhere in between there.
Yeah, and I think him and Lacazette are really going to benefit from having Willian because of the service he's going to give them. So I'm excited to see how those three combine. Poor old Pepe. He ain't getting in this team while those dudes are like that, is he?
No, he's not, because as long as Willian is doing what he did in this game, which is being very good and causing lots of problems and like riding challenges, picking up loose balls after a challenge has come in, he'll kind of like, I kept seeing him, like an Arsenal player would be on the ball, a Fulham player would come clattering in, there'd be a little bit of like indecision, the ball would be a little bit loose, and then suddenly Willian is there picking the ball up and dribbling forward like 20 yards. He just seemed to be the all-action wide midfielder or wide attacker they've been needing. That front three of Willian, Lacazette, Aubameyang. Again, looking very consistent for it being only the first game. Makes me feel like Mikel Arteta knew exactly what he wanted with Willian and got exactly that. I think knew he needed a more solid defender, got that with Gabriel. I don't know if they're done with their signings. I don't know. I know they're not done with their contract signings because they're hoping to pen Aubameyang to a permanent long-term deal. But we'll see what happens there. But for now, I think Arsenal fans should feel very optimistic. So too should Leicester fans, maybe Newcastle fans too. We'll talk a little bit about those two teams in just a moment. Ryan, anything else from Arsenal Fulham before we move along?
I just want to say that I bet there's no Tottenham fans listening to this podcast anymore, because not only did we slate them, but we've been praising the heck out of their fiercest rivals.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Sorry, guys, if you are still listening, the zero of you who are. But I guess some Arsenal fans are, hopefully, so that's good.
Sure.
If people are listening and want a new job, Ryan, then we've got a sponsor for them, don't we, sir?
Do we have a sponsor for them? Small businesses have unique needs, and despite the current uncertainty, one thing remains unchanged. It's the importance of having the right people on your team. Don't we know it? When your business is ready to make that next hire, LinkedIn Jobs, that is, can help by matching your role with qualified candidates so that you can find the right person quickly. Taylor, I've known my way around a few job sites, and I have to say, legit, LinkedIn Jobs is the most impressive one. When you fire up linkedin.com/jobs, if you've got a profile on LinkedIn already, it tailors all the jobs to your resume already. So I've just done it for me, and I'm looking at all these jobs and thinking, hey, I could do that. Hey, I could do that. They wouldn't pay me very much, but hey, I could do that one too. So it's a really, really good job site, and very impressed with it.
So I want to ask you some more questions about that, because I believe I have a LinkedIn account. I believe I have not checked it since 2013, I would guess I'm correct in saying. I'm pretty sure that maybe TSS is mentioned in my LinkedIn account. I think my old company that I worked for is more prevalent there. I think I have like my business suit and my business look going as well. So Ryan, for a person who is maybe more familiar with LinkedIn and LinkedIn jobs, what is it exactly that like makes the difference for you? Why does it make you feel maybe a little bit more energized? Because sometimes when I was looking for jobs via LinkedIn back in 2013, it was a bit more of a like, I guess I could apply for that. I guess that would work. And it sounds to me like this for you is much more of a like, yeah, why not? Oh, I could do that. I could do that too. It feels more energizing.
I think I'm sucked in by the very nice design of the page, and also the fact that it is just so gosh darn tailored to me. If you go to other job sites, you've got to input a lot of data. You've got to try and find things which, you know, sort the wheat from the chaff, if you will. But I feel like looking at this, there is lots of opportunities, and it's done by geo-targeted stuff as well. So it's a lot of it's local to me as well. And I'm looking at the kind of jobs where I think, yeah, I could literally do that. Yes, they know me. Yes, they've seen my experience on LinkedIn. And very, very impressive stuff. And we all know LinkedIn. Most of us know LinkedIn, apart from those of us who haven't updated their profile since 2013. Yeah. An active community of professionals with over 690 million members worldwide, including Taylor Rockwell. And LinkedIn job screens candidates with the hard and soft skills that you're looking for.
Very That's nice. Right. TSS, not yet ready to make our next hire. Maybe one day. But if you, dear listener or dear listener business, are, when your business is ready to make the next hire, find the right person with LinkedIn Jobs. You can pay what you want and get the first $50 off. I'm assuming that relates to LinkedIn as opposed to salaries and such. Just visit LinkedIn.com/TSS. Again, that's LinkedIn.com/TSS to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions do very much apply. Thank you very much to LinkedIn for sponsoring today's show. Thank you very much to Ryan for hyping LinkedIn appropriately. I do appreciate that. Ryan,
Taylor,
what
we
else?
Have a sponsor that I believe in. I like to go full in on it. So I've been big on the toning spray, big on LinkedIn Jobs today. So you're very welcome for that. I do want to hear more about your business suit, though. Please tell me more.
I remember the boss at the time. I will tell you this. He told me he needed me to give a look of disdain. And I was like, what? And he was like, yeah, I want your profile photo to look like you think you're better than the people. You think you, and I, for the life of me, cannot pull that look off. So I think in the end, it just looks like I smell something bad. I think it's my look of like, I think I'm better than you. It's mostly just like, I'm sorry, I smell something. That was
Who told you to do this?
My old employer, who's no longer my employer.
Goodness me. What
yeah, it's
advice.
My employer who was like, don't worry, we're definitely going to let you like be the managing editor and run the company. Oh, but I'm not going to pay you for 6 months. I hope that's fine. And you know what, Ryan? It was not fine. So here we are in a much happier position talking about all things soccer, talking a little bit more about the Premier League. Yeah. I would like to take this moment as we come to the end of the show to apologize to Leicester just a tiny little bit, because in my season preview, by the way, it was the case that I think, I don't know if it was like odds and evens played evens, but I feel like every team that I previewed played another team I previewed, and every team that Daryl previewed played another team Daryl previewed. I got my West Brom preview more or less right. They lose 3-0. They have some concerns. For Leicester, I was kind of incorrect, because I had some concerns about the fullbacks. Castagne coming in with Ben Chilwell departing. You had James Justin having to deputize because Ricardo Pereira is still out with injury, and it seemed to me like they wouldn't be able to attack with those fullbacks as much, or at least not as readily as early. So I thought they were going to have to be a bit more defensive. I thought they would therefore not be as strong in their attack. And instead, Castagne, I believe, scores the opener in this game. And both of them, James Justin, I think, draws one of the penalties. Very great attacking play from those fullbacks for Leicester, creating opportunities, creating two penalties. Leicester looking very strong with a 3-0 win early, and kind of right back to where they were last season, which is performing very, very well, as I think, but maybe they're not going to keep doing that. And then I'm assuming that means that next week, Castagne will have two goals and James Justin will get a hat trick or something like that. That seems fair, right? That's not over-expecting things.
Well, I hope so, because I signed Castagne to my Fantasy Premier League draft team, and I have been fully vindicated on that decision. Did you know the last time Leicester won their opening match of the season, they won the Premier League?
Here we go. That's it. It's official. Leicester going to win the title again based solely off that statistic. I just can't get over like Castagne. Michael Richards for Match of the Day did a good job of sort of tracking his involvement. He does have one where Castagne plays the ball in maybe 10 yards ahead of the forward line. And Michael Richards said, I think of like, if a forward were able to get to that, it might have been a good chance. And it was like, okay, that's maybe not as strong of an argument. But I thought the way he attacked with such confidence, but though in the way he was never really caught out, to my mind at least, not like horrifically, but then tracks runs, like overloads in the middle, goes from one side to the other if needed. It seemed like he had been playing in that system for a very long time, which he decidedly has not. He's been in a back 3/back 5 at Atalanta. Yeah. He doesn't have those same issues we talked about with Matt Doherty. It seemed like he fits really well. James Justin continues to perform. So I have significantly fewer, at least two fewer concerns about Leicester this season. I'm kind of moving them up in my estimations in the table.
Yeah, I would say that's a wise decision to make based on the evidence we have. Also, I'm thinking maybe two teams named West are going to get relegated this year. Perhaps this one with their barcode shirts.
Not and a then lot to write maybe the other one losing this weekend as well?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Taylor. I think so.
Yeah, not a great start for West Ham United. A 2-0 loss at home, such as home field advantage matters. 2-0 to Newcastle with a goal from Callum Wilson, which made me very happy because Hapik. I was reading Jeff Hendrick as the other goal scorer. Callum Wilson made me happy because my preview for Newcastle was focused on, this is not just me bragging, but this is me sort of feeling like, okay, this is Newcastle doing what we expected, which is Callum Wilson being the target striker, the scrappy goal scorer that I think they have not had and have been looking for. I think Joe Linton was meant to be that, but is not that. I think Callum Wilson is, and that he gets that first goal, they have to be optimistic about that. That Jeff Hendrick gets the assist and then gets the second goal, a player who they get on a free from Burnley, that has to feel like a smart signing. Even if nothing else happens, he got a goal and assist on the season to open it up and to get that win in the very beginning. Seems like things are on the right track, even as the news comes across that Newcastle likely going to go to court over that Saudi takeover. So that still seems to be in the works. That still seems like a thing that could happen down the road. But for now, at least if it does, they won't be taking over a team in the championship, it seems, because Newcastle off to a strong start.
Yeah, very much so. I've made some good signings, as you say, and looking pretty robust at the moment. The same cannot be said for West Ham.
No.
Who are the Ceballos and Nketiah fight is their spirit animal at the moment. and it seems like it's not a very happy camp at the moment. And I did predict that they would go down. And I think, sorry, West Ham fans, now's kind of the time. I can see you slipping down with them and with West Brom and Fulham.
Is there one or two or whatever many things specifically that you don't like about them or you think are problematic? Is it just sort of a lack of quality in your mind across the board?
There's a lack of quality. There's a Tottenham-esque lack of creativity. Mm-hmm. They kept, like, a lot of games when you watched them last season, you thought, goodness me, what am I watching here? And I think the most important thing is the negativity within the camp, the negativity within the club. To have like Mark Noble speak out, was it a week ago, against the decisions of his own club, I think it's pretty shocking.
Oh, the Diangana sale?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's very, very troubling that the captain would do that. So I don't have a lot of faith in West Ham and their ability to survive this season.
Do you have more faith in West Ham to survive or Peacock not to frustrate you? That's a confusing question. I'm not even sure I understood it.
Oh, I get what you mean here. I am nay happy with NBC Sports at the moment, Taylor. I've been very happy with NBC Sports for their coverage of the Premier League since it started. I think they do a wonderful job. I think their studio experience is excellent. I think their commentary team is top notch. This whole Peacock thing, though, has ground my gears rather a lot this weekend.
Oh, boy.
When I sit down to watch Tottenham Everton this Saturday, to my dismay, I found out it's exclusively on Peacock. And then I find out quite a lot of games are exclusively on Peacock. We're recording on Monday. The Chelsea game later on today is also on Peacock. If you look ahead to next weekend, Taylor, of the 10 fixtures, 8 of them are on Peacock. 80% of next week's fixtures are on Peacock exclusively. Now, I'll couch this in the fact that watching the Premier League here is relatively cheap compared to, say, the home market, the UK, where it's a lot more expensive. It's like £25 a month just to have the Premier League, and then you've got your Sky package on top of that. So £4.99 a month isn't too terrible a thing for Peacock. But I've just been a bit annoyed at how it was kind of teased as a replacement, an improvement replacement service for Gold, and it's not, because it's taking broadcast games away from NBC Sports Network. There's no reason why they couldn't show that Tottenham game on the broadcast channel. They've moved it to Peacock to make us buy Peacock, which is something we're all going to have to do because we're going to miss 80% of games next weekend.
I did not know the 8 of the 10. That is a frustrating and troubling number. My hope would be that that's an early season thing to drive people to Peacock, and then it balances out a little bit more. I don't know if that's the case.
Maybe.
But I'm with you that I was prepared for it to be on TV. I was all set for it. I then started looking at the channels, and I was like, huh, maybe I'm missing something. I am slightly stupid. Then came your message of, like, it's only on Peacock, which made more sense but was simultaneously frustrating just for a little bit of the disruption. 8 of the 10 next week, a larger disruption, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, and it's just very frustrating because I feel like I was happy to dump cable to go for the streaming model, but I've just got so many streaming services that I have now. I have to have, like, I've got a streaming cable package, which, you know, I have Hulu, I've had previous ones, I've had Fubo, I've had YouTube, I've had all of them to try them, and I sort of go in rotation. They're all about $60 a month.
Yeah.
And then you've got the ESPN Plus if you want to watch the Serie A and whatnot. You need your cable if you want to watch the Bundesliga and be in sports. CBS, you need to have their subscription now for the Champions League. And that's on top of all your other stuff, your HBOs and your Primes and your Netflixes. It feels like it's so fragmented at the moment. And there's so many subscriptions needed. It's just not a very pleasant user experience. So I'd feel better if sort of Peacock was built into the broadcast, maybe, and you could buy it as like a subscription channel, so it was at least in the same place. I don't know. I just feel like it's a bit price gougy. I'm not very happy about it.
I am still, like, this is, first of all, let me just say up front, this is very much a first world problem, a first world problem, but
sure.
Like, to your point, I subscribe to so many different things, some of them because of sports and wanting to be able to watch as many games as possible, some of them because I like watching movies. But it has gotten to the point when if there is something that isn't available to stream, it feels like an injustice because it's like, but with the 400 things I subscribe to, I can't watch Skyfall for real. I have to buy Skyfall. You're going to give me the first two James Bonds and not the third one, which is my favorite one of the Daniel Craig series. Even if it becomes like Home Alone, that's unacceptable. End of Skyfall rant, also end of Peacock rant, which is to say, I don't love that it's 8 out of 10. I hope it bounces out a bit more because that is kind of what Gold was, right? It was more of the, if Crystal Palace is playing West Brom, no disrespect meant, but you know what I mean when I say those two teams. Like, that was the type of fixture that I feel like tended to be on NBC Sports Gold, not necessarily Spurs Everton.
Well, Gold was for if there was 5 3 p.m./10 a.m.
Right, exactly,
kickoffs,
yeah.
Then you get four of them on Gold, and there'd always be a broadcast slot game on the broadcast channels. And that's evidently not the case anymore. Maybe they've been emboldened by the fact that Bleacher Report and CBS have put their content out on apps and seen that people do buy them. So I don't know. It just feels like we're trying to grow this sport in this country, and we're putting obstacles like this in front of people. And I don't really like that.
But you're not an obstacle, Ryan. You make talking about and hearing about soccer easy. And people like Weston McKinney continue to get people excited about soccer in America. Weston McKinney does play this weekend. Final thing I wanted to mention before we call it a day. He starts in a 3-5-2 for Juventus. That's all we need to know. 3-5-2, he starts. That's it. That's the future. He's going to win the World Cup. I should add, he played the first half in a 5-0 win. It was 1-0 at halftime when he subs out. In a preseason friendly, Bentancur subs on, and it feels like it's going to be maybe the opposite of that going forward. Bentancur starts the season. Maybe Weston McKennie gets 10 or 15 minutes at the end. I'm still fine with that, but I just wanted to point out that McKennie is already getting minutes. There was the photo of Cristiano Ronaldo with an arm around him that I think had some people excited. Big fans of bright jerseys were probably excited to see Weston McKennie wearing whatever jersey that was. Ryan, your thoughts on a bright orange kit?
They're great. Tony the Tiger
well
style,
done.
Baby.
Well done. But yeah, so Weston McKennie does get minutes. But that is about all I have to say about that because I have not seen those minutes. I just know that they were in there. But in a first half of a friendly that was not televised, to my knowledge. So well done to Weston. Well done to Liverpool and Leeds and Everton and Arsenal. Less so to some of the other teams we've talked about. Ryan, anything else from the weekend you'd like to discuss before we call it a day?
Let's see. We covered the soccer. We covered beard masks. Nope, we're all set. Good.
Ernest, we got Ernest movies in there. It's always important.
Now I'm going to go check if there's any streaming services showing Ernest films.
If there's not, that's the next one. It's the Ernest app. You go there. You can't call it the Ernest app, though, right? It has to be like the Varney app. Let's brainstorm this off air. But for now, Ryan, thank you very much for taking all the time to hear my nonsense and talk to me about some of that nonsense on today's episode.
Note to self, pitch Varney flicks. Always a pleasure, Taylor. Never a chore. We'll be right back.